Hello, all my lovelies. I just had a real come-to-Jesus moment. This past week, I accidentally, and I do mean very accidentally, spilled a bucket of honey on my microphone. Several days were spent trying to get all the sugar and the honey off the microphone, so I didn't know if it was going to work, but it appears that it is, and I'm so very grateful for that. This week, you're going to hear something a little different. I interview my very good friend, Amy. We met decades ago now in college. And what I thought was so beautiful about this interview was Amy got to reflect back to me just what she thought about me in college, how she perceived me. And that was such a huge gift and miracle for me. And then we shared this particularly hilarious memory, which you're going to hear about, back when I was able to wear a bustier and bike shorts without feeling appalled at the shape of my body. But I think it's so important to have those people in our lives that can kind of mirror back to us their idea of who we are and just how we move in the world. It can be such a beautiful thing, such a miraculous thing to kind of hear those gorgeous stories from others. Now this week, I interview my dear friend Amy Svoboda, and she has been such a champion of the podcast. So when she reached out to me and said, "I have a story for you and I'm ready to share it," I jumped at the chance. Her story is about the day her mother died and everything that ensued after her mother's death. It's very heartfelt, very heart-wrenching, but ultimately comes with a good dose of humor. So now, episode 126 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
And so, you know, we're in Maui. My mom is on the gurney and they're wheeling her away. And, you know, my parents' condo on one side is the ocean. On the back side is the West Maui Mountains. And in Maui, there's trade winds. And so as they begin to wheel out my mom, and Laura and I are going back into our gut-wrenching wailing again, because it was just like, I did not want to see my mom, you know, disappear like that and the finality of that. And they begin to wheel her down the hallway of the condo building, and a gust of wind came and it blew the top off. So I got to see her again. I would describe myself as a lifelong learner. I try to be curious. I try to have an open mind. I try to go with the flow and be adaptable. I'm not always all of those things, but that's the goal. I try to keep in motion. You know, one of the things my mom taught me, she was a walker. And I remember she had her 50th high school reunion and she was in charge of it. And she said, there's a big difference between the people that kept moving in life and the people that didn't. You know, for a 50th reunion, they needed a bus just to go across the tracks a few blocks for some of the people, you know, for good reason, you know, maybe not always because they were sedentary, but if you don't move it, you lose it. I believe in like the healing power of dance. You know, if music is on, I'll start moving. It's almost involuntary. I have three kids, 23, 22, and 17. And that, it blows me away that I have kids those ages. And motherhood is the most wonderful and most difficult job I've ever had. It's never easy. Your heart is just so connected to your children. And when they feel pain, you feel pain. And then they feel pain because you feel pain. And it's like this never ending cycle of emotion. I feel in my family, we feel our emotions very deeply and with intensity. And sometimes that the weight of that can make us stuck and not have that movement I was talking about. So consciously being in motion and moving is part of who I am, because I do realize that I'm prone to, you know, being stuck and still, and not in the good way, not in the good yoga sense. and I am a yoga instructor. I just self-describe as one of the least flexible yoga instructors I know. I'm not naturally flexible. I love yoga and I practice it as a student and teach it because I internalize a lot of stress and anxiety and thoughts and emotions. And taking yoga years ago, even though, you know, if people could be bad at yoga, you know, I wasn't flexible. So if that's bad, I was bad. But I felt so good after the class. And so I was drawn to it, even though it's not my natural ability to be in poses that are, you know, showing off your leg being high up in the air. Mine is lucky to be at 90 degrees as opposed to 180. So, but I love it.
You know, before we started recording this conversation, we were talking about you dancing and college. And I thought it was really interesting that you described yourself as going with the flow. And then you said, and I love to dance, because before we started talking, we were talking about this event in college where, you know, or two different events, I guess, the whole Madonna event,
yeah,
which by the way, took a lot of guts to be in that show. It took a lot of guts. And then
so much fun
during Rush. And you were saying that at Rush for the dancing, they moved you. Because were you saying because you weren't good enough or?
Yeah. So I was the youngest child. I have two older sisters and they're 5.5 and 7.5 years older than me. And I think by the time I came along, my mom was done driving to practices or anything. So they got like ice skating lessons and things like that. But she was done. You know, she didn't like driving in general. And so I never had a dance class or any lessons. And I'm making myself out to be like a victim here. I got tennis lessons because my dad loved to play tennis. So I wasn't completely deprived at all. But when we got to college, you were amazing, by the way. And I've told you this before and I need to say it now. During Rush, seeing you was like, I was like, wow. It's a whole group of, you know, college age women. And it was like, you had the spotlight on you because honestly, I was like, you definitely stood out. And so the following year when I was in the sorority and we did, you know, all of those songs and everything, I'm like, I'm going to do this. But I didn't know what an eight count was. I didn't know which way to spin around or, you know, how to move on the beat or whatever. And so, I mean, I have free form dance. I love to dance. I will dance anywhere, but I don't know any of the steps. I don't even know the terms for the steps. And so, yeah, they put me in the front row probably because I'm a little short. And then by the end of, you know, when we were a rehearsal before we even did the thing, I was in the back row and I was happy about it, by the way, because I didn't want to screw up in the front row.
I do have to tell you, I was in show choir when I was in high school. So I got to do that in practice. Yeah. I remember thinking, remember to smile and be excited about being here. I remembered that.
Yeah.
Show choir changed my entire life.
That Madonna thing, the Madonna. I did not realize you choreographed that whole thing, but it doesn't surprise me at all. And it was so much fun. And yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it was. What is funny is that it was such a fun and ridiculous part of my life in college, but it was just so unbelievable. And the fact that you remember it, and then my sister ran into two other women who were older than me that remember it. It must have been like something. What it was just five or six different women lip syncing five or six different Madonna songs with a whole, by the way, an entire backup dance troupe behind them doing all these moves. And then I just remembered that I wore a bustier and like bike shorts and I danced on a chair, culminating with me standing on the chair and then flipping it forward with my leg, which I was like, there is a high percentage that I'm going to really hurt myself. But it worked.
It worked.
I didn't hurt myself.
Better than flash dance. It was amazing.
And people still remember it. It's like kind of unreal.
Yeah. No, the whole rush thing didn't dissuade me from being a backup dancer. I was a backup dancer. I was fully engaged, fully there. It was so much fun too. It feels like yesterday. I did not grow up in a religious household, but very spiritual. So this will give you an idea of my mom's sense of humor. My parents met at Cornell College in Iowa, which is like a little college on top of a hill in Mount Vernon, Iowa. I think there's 1,000 students that go there now. I guess it's Christian, or I don't know if it still is, but it was then. So my mom's joke was that she was going to a little Christian school because she's a little bit Christian. And so, you know, that kind of describes her perfectly. She definitely had a strong moral compass and just cared so deeply about people and the environment and children. She was a teacher and she taught first grade. And she loved teaching first grade because at the time we weren't all that competitive in the schools like we are now, trying to get our kids to learn how to read and when they're 3, 4, 5 years old. And the majority of them learned in first grade. And she said it was magical when their eyes lit up and they understood how the words came together. And she just loved teaching first grade. And later on, she was a preschool teacher and you know, definitely one of the kind of teachers that sat on the ground and building with blocks. And they had a dress up bin at the preschool and I had her wedding dress in it. That's to give you an idea of how she felt about kids. She just thought young children were the future. And so my sisters were baptized Lutheran because my dad was Lutheran. My mom was Methodist growing up. However, my grandpa, her father, was Catholic. And he used to skip Mass and go to Coney Island because he lived in Brooklyn, New York. And so he wasn't all that into it. I can't remember what the deal was, but I don't know, like, if there were beatings from the nuns, you know, how you've heard that. I think he, you know, thought it was a little bit not for him. And so that's why this is all the more interesting. When I was 7, I wasn't baptized. My sisters were. I never quite got the whole story of why they were baptized Lutheran, except for my dad was Lutheran. And I, you know how you hear things, you're 7. And I was terrified I was going to hell because I wasn't baptized. So around the corner from my house, there was this Catholic church and they had parties and like all my friends went to CCD there. So I begged my mom to become Catholic. I'm like, I want to become Catholic. And so I became Catholic. I got baptized when I was 7 years old because I wanted to become Catholic. And then there's this really fun priest there at the time. His name was Father Murphy and he was really funny and he led the catechumenate program. So my mom became Catholic. My dad became Catholic, and that even both my sisters became Catholic. And it was all because I thought, you know, the cool people went to the Catholic church and I wanted to be part of it. You know, am I Catholic today? I'm trying to keep an open mind and not be negative about the church, you know, but the church is human. I'm human. The church is human. I could go into detail on my issues with the Catholic Church, but I do believe there's, you know, good that comes from it too. And that what drew me to the Catholic Church, the community, my friends and everything, the social aspect, I think that is the good. So I think I was drawn there for the right reason.
Yeah, the Archbishop in Portland was a White Sox fan. So I used to give, I mean, he's like 85 years old. I used to give him so much shit. And be like, Cubs are better. Cubs are better.
Yeah, you know? Go Cubs.
But he could totally hang with that. And he had the best sense of humor. And I think a sense of humor makes a big difference in general, just in whatever position. It doesn't matter what you do, whether it's your garbage man or a priest or a teacher or whatever. Sense of humor is essential. Life, just if you're alive.
Actually segues really well into my mom. You know, my mom was funny. She had a quick wit. And why I wanted to talk to you today, if it's all right, I can just go right in. So I wanted to talk about the day my mom died. First of all, thank you for having me on, because I just think of this as a huge gift. We had my mom's celebration of life on Earth Day 2019. She passed away April 9th of 2019. And both of my sisters spoke, and I opted out. I chose not to speak. And then, you know, we passed a mic around, and several people had a chance to say something, and it was her old students and friends and all sorts of people from all walks of life. You know, my mom was a pacifist. She marched with the liberal nuns with the Eighth Day Center for Peace at the Federal Building in Chicago. And she, you know, had, oh gosh, what's the name? Oh, she had the greatest like feminist, like, oh gosh, Exceptional Women's Club, I think it was called, or something to that effect. She had people from there. She was in, you know, book clubs like so many people are. And she was in anti-racism groups where she met with people from all over the city of Chicago and became good friends with them. So many people were at this event, and it was, you know, a celebration of life to tie into kind of how she presented herself in the world. Everyone was encouraged to wear bright blue because that was her favorite color, and such a positive event. But I chose not to speak because I wasn't ready. And I just, you know, had to process. She meant so much to me, and I wasn't ready to speak. So being able to tell this story right now is just a huge gift. And I want to thank you for it. And I think it does tie into your podcast, because it was magical. I'd mentioned that I'll speak for myself. I feel my emotions very intensely and deeply. And I had PTSD from trauma I experienced in the past. And all my mom wanted was us to be okay. She had cancer. She had this like highest pain threshold out of anyone I've ever met. She had cancer of the vulva. So anytime she would go to the bathroom, I know she was in so much pain. And even with the Alzheimer's, she would try to say she's okay. And it was hard to see her in that much pain. And, you know, and then layered on top of that, she had Alzheimer's. So she had memory loss and didn't really understand why she was in pain. It was a tough road. And one of those, you know, like I never, you know, wanted to lose her. You know, I loved her so dearly, but at the same time, it was merciful. You know, you don't want to see your mom in that much pain. My dad and my mom live in Maui during the winter and live in Chicago the other half of the year. And so we found out the cancer had come back because she had had it before. And we just booked a flight to Maui the next day because we knew the winter was coming. She would prefer to be in Maui during that time. And so my sister, Laura, who lives in Boise, Idaho, but she took some time off and wanted to be with my mom and help my dad with all the caregiving. My mom had Alzheimer's for about a few years before she passed away. So she took time off from her job as an assistant dean in Idaho and was staying with my parents prior to the diagnosis that my mom had cancer again. And once they found out that it had come back, they booked that flight and went back to Maui. And so that was probably sometime in October, I think. And they got to Maui and my mom's health continued to decline. It was a tough time, but I mean, there's so many positive stories from that, you know, that I could go into. But the ones that I really want to share have to do with, you know, the day that my mom passed away, because I think she was working her magic. My sister Laura and I were there at that point. My other sister Sandy is also a teacher, and she had been there about a week before my mom passed away. But because, you know, she had to go back to work, she wasn't there at the very end. And so my sister Laura and I and my dad were there. And as we got closer to my mom passing away, one night I had this dream. It was so vivid. And my sister, Laura, who was there, is very disciplined with her exercise and her eating, and she doesn't eat sugar. And so when my parents were hanging out and my sister was there, Laura would go to sleep and they would snack on cookies and ice cream. Because my mom would say, is she in bed yet? And then they would have cookies and ice cream. And my sister Laura, she's like, I would have been fine with that. But it was just funny. My mom with my Alzheimer's knew that Laura wouldn't approve of the sugar. And so I had this really vivid dream, a few days before my mom passed away. And so my mom was in a hospital bed, And it was next to my parents' bed, and then in between that and the sliding door to the lanai. And there was curtains on the sliding door. And all of a sudden I see in my dream, my mom peeking behind the curtain. And I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? And she's sneaking cookies. And she's just eating cookies in my dream. And so like, I woke up the next day, I'm like, I just had this dream that mom was sneaking cookies. I don't know what that's all about. And at this point, my mom wasn't eating or drinking anything. And we knew the end was getting pretty close. As we, you know, neared the day, there was, you know, every once in a while, we'd all like gather around her because her breathing would change. And that happened a few times with people passing away. You're just never sure, you know, when it's going to happen. And it's every moment is sacred and you just want to say the right things and do the right things. Is it okay if I segue here to my sister's writing a little bit? Okay. So my sister is a writer and she has kind of a famous quote that has been taken out of context, but the quote is like on shirts and hats and bags in the like natural childbirth realm. They have co-opted her quote. And the quote is, there's a secret in our society. And it's not that birth is painful. It's that women are strong. And so that's my sister's quote. And so she had written that in an article. She, you know, she's written for like Parents and Parenting and, you know, just various magazines back when we had magazines that were like actual magazines. And some, you know, before anything would go viral, that went the old times version of viral, like got printed on t-shirts and things like that. She wrote a follow-up article because it became so popular that sometimes people who had very difficult births and couldn't go the natural route or you know, sometimes birth can be traumatic. They would write, you know, on these forums now that things were coming online, you know, how offensive her quote was, because they're strong, but they couldn't give birth naturally, or they had a traumatic or tragic birth. So my sister wrote this follow-up article and kind of set it straight, the context of everything. And, you know, she's like, I didn't have my twins. I had them naturally, but it was only because, you know, she went into labor early and couldn't have an epidural. And she said the point of the quote was that women, she felt the importance of sharing our birth stories and sharing things that, you know, have been kind of hidden and kept secret. And there's power in sharing that, and there's healing in sharing that, and so many positive things in sharing that. And, you know, I take that to the situation with my mom and sharing the story of the day that she died. And as I've already mentioned, my mom was funny, and my mom did not want us to be traumatized or to be stuck in sadness. And so on the day that she died, I swear to God, it was like a comedy of errors. It was like a comedy show. I don't even know how to even describe it any other way. I mean, it was sacred, it was special, but she made for damn sure that we, my sister and I and my dad, didn't like leave that day just weighted down in grief and sadness, and that's it. She wanted us to have a little levity, she wanted us to look back on that day and kind of laugh. And that's kind of what we do. And it was like her gift. And so what happened was, on the day that she died, it was just, you know, all the sacred things. I mean, we're surrounding her bed. Laura is sitting on the opposite side of her hospital bed on on her walker, you know, which had a little seat on it. And she's just kind of smashed up against the sliding glass door. And my dad and I are sitting next to each other on the other side of her hospital bed. And we're just talking to her and telling her that we loved her. And we can tell her breathing is changing, and we're feeling all the feelings. And eventually, you know, my mom's breathing stops, and we're sitting there and just kind of processing that. And it's overwhelming. And what happens is we start crying, and it's that deep guttural, like over the top crying. And Laura gets up and she wants to sit by us. So she comes to our side of the bed to hug us, because we're just like hyperventilating. We're crying so hard. And she sits down and we're all like shaking and crying. And the next thing we know, we hear something. We look to the right, and my sister had sat on the bed control, and my mom is rising up. I'm not kidding you. And we just turn to the right, and we see my mom, who's no longer breathing, and she's sitting up with us. And we couldn't do anything but switch, like full on switch on a dime, from crying to laughter. I mean, seriously, I mean, and that's so my mom. Like, my mom made that happen, because she's like, okay, you guys, get over yourself. Quit your crying. Stop it right now. You're not going to do this. So there's no way we're going to be like stuck in that grief and that trauma and that PTSD from that. I mean, seriously, because we were already laughing. And then, you know, we look outside, and it wasn't even raining. It wasn't even raining at all. And a rainbow rose up out of the water. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I believe. I don't know what I believe still, but I believe something. It was amazing. And I mean, it rose from the water. It was sunny out. I mean, it came up from the water. It doesn't end there. I don't want to fast forward too much, but you know, so like the cycle of grief, we have to call people. We're calling the hospice nurse, making arrangements, trying, you know, to figure out what the plan is, who to call, who to let know. And all of a sudden, the doorbell rings. And my dad said, oh my God, the dishwasher is getting delivered. My sister's on the phone with my aunt. And my aunt is saying, cancel the dishwasher. Well, my dad's in grief. He's not thinking. He's just, and my mom's in a bedroom. She's in clothes. No one can see her. My dad answers the door and lets them in with the dishwasher because he didn't know what to do. And so these two guys come in to deliver the dishwasher. And one of them has a Blazing Saddles hat on. So not everyone will get that reference, but a Blazing Saddles, you know, comedy movie, Mel Brooks, definitely not politically correct, very goofy. And the other guy has a shirt that just says Rocky on it, and they're goofy. And my dad's like, Mom would want us to have clean dishes. No, Mom hated to do this. She sent them. So we're kind of huddled around my mom while my dad's outside with the guys installing a dishwasher. It was very incongruous. Yeah, so we have a dishwasher getting installed with my recently deceased mom in the other room. Definitely my mom making this happen again. She was having fun wherever she was. So as we're telling people that my mom passed away, we're telling them all these funny things that are happening too, which if they knew my mom well enough, they know exactly what was going on. You know, same day, dishwasher's in, Rocky and Blazing Saddles guy are gone. We get clean dishes. The hospice nurse comes and we spend some really special time with my mom. You know, the one thing that I would want to talk about, which was life-changing for me and, you know, isn't funny, but hugely positive is, you know, my mom, as I mentioned, was in a lot of pain with the cancer and in a lot of confusion with the Alzheimer's. And the other thing that happened the moment she passed away is like the confused look and expression on her face. It was just gone the moment she stopped breathing. It was like that disappeared and she looked like my mom again. And I, you know, I got to grieve her the 4 years before, you know, before the Alzheimer's, and remember her before she was forgetting. So she wasn't done though. She was not done. There was one more thing. And this isn't quite as funny as it is like obvious that she didn't want us to have PTSD from the day she died. But as I said, you know, like we telling these stories makes you feel a little less alone, and you know, it's can be powerful and can be healing. And that's what my hope is by sharing this. But there's nothing more painful and more difficult if you're there with your loved one when they pass away as when they're put on the gurney and that weird three-dimensional covering goes over them. You know, the finality of that is just awful and it's traumatizing. I don't know why I think of this, but do you remember like Sleeping Beauty and, you know, having that covering and it's like that, but it's opaque, you know, and the finality of it is just, it's, you know, traumatizing. And so, you know, we're in Maui, my mom is on the gurney and they're wheeling her away. And, you know, my parents' condo on one side is the ocean. On the back side is the West Maui Mountains. And in Maui, there's trade winds. And so as they begin to wheel out my mom, and Laura and I are going back into our gut-wrenching wailing again, because it was just like, I did not want to see my mom, you know, disappear like that and the finality of that. And they begin to wheel her down the hallway of the condo building and a gust of wind came and it blew the top off. So I got to see her again. And we're just like, Laura and I, we start laughing. It was a nervous laugh. It wasn't like a laugh, but we're like, oh my God, she did this for us. It was her gift to us so that we didn't have to see her, you know, being wheeled away and, you know, never to be seen again. So instead, my last memory of my mom is something funny or something comical, you know, and so it just, I don't know, the day she passed away, it was just obvious to me that there is something that happens when we transition, that we're still connected. And Alzheimer's and all, I remember talking to my mom before I flew out there. It was just a few days before I flew out there. And I have a daughter who's in musical theater and show choir like you and everything like that. And so she was in a show, and it was, the cast party was at like a Culver's, and they're all hanging out, like taking over the Culver's and destroying it with who knows what, with theater kid type actions, dancing on the tables, maybe doing your chair trick that you did during our Madonna thing. And I was out in my car, you know, there's utter chaos going on. And this is just before I went to see her, before she passed away. And, you know, I'm talking to her on the phone, and her, you know, memory of if she knew us would come and go. Like she said once to my sister, "I don't know who you are, but I know that I love you." You know, she said that to my sister, Laura. Yeah. So I was sitting on the phone with her, and there's chaos going on inside the Culver's, but it's this peace, like this Zen feeling, me talking on the phone in my car with my mom. And she said, "Amy, I just know we're always going to be connected somehow. We'll always be connected, you know." And this was like 2 weeks before she passed away, and she kept her promise.
So need to thank Amy for sharing all these precious stories of the day that her mother passed away. I'm so grateful that she felt safe telling them, and she feels safe telling my audience. It's stories like these, where spirit trumps death, that absolutely keep me going. So thank you, Amy, for having the willingness to share about both your mother and the day she passed away. I need to thank all my listeners on Insight Timer. Thanks so much, you guys. You've given me so many ratings and left so many reviews. To be honest, they all keep me going. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And there will be a lot more content coming so very soon. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode: Justin Allen Arnold, Winnie the Moog, Frank Schroeder, Otis Galloway, and Kevin McLeod. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to books, music, artists, art, all sorts of delicious goodies that I hope lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Amy. Have an open heart and believe in laughter. Believe in humor, and believe in joy, because those three things, they're the Holy Trinity, and those three things will get you through practically anything.